CBC World Service, this is On the Podium, where Olympians and Paralympians bare their souls. And I keep my soul in a well-fitted suit, not bearing my soul at all. I'm Eliza Skinner, and with me, as always, is BBC Athletics commentator Ed Harry and Paralympian Scout Bassett.
Well, I'm chewing right now.
Well, yeah, you're chewing right now because you brought an immense amount of snacks for us. You have just a full spread of snacks here that no one else thought to bring. And it just makes me wonder, is there anything that you could eat before a competition that would ruin you?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably, well, I love ramen, but it's really salty. And it's a little bit heavy because of the liquid and the noodles. And I love putting a ton of hot sauce in it.
More salty.
Yep. Had that before I've gone to a training session. Let's just say I spent just as much time on the toilet than I did on the track.
People can look out for if they see an especially puffy version of you running. That's you salt logged.
Yeah. And the spices kind of run through you, so not a good idea to do that right before. They call me snack master. I graze all day long. And if people want to know how you stay a little trim, you just graze all day long. You don't eat like full meals.
Oh, that's it. It's not the constant running and training. It's the
Yeah. You don't eat like a full, you know, you just graze all day long. And then that way when you get to the meals, you're already kind of
half full.
Full somewhat. Yeah.
Do you have, like, is there something, if you're going to do some stand-up, is there a thing that you would always make sure you did eat, or a thing you always make sure you don't eat?
I try not to drink before
I do.
Well,
I was going
to
say, sometimes you hear that too.
Yeah, well, I mean, most comedy clubs are really just bars with a gimmick. Like, there's a lot of drinking in comedy. And a lot of people think that it makes them funnier, and I think it just makes everybody worse. Like, it's fine, you know, if sometimes you can be worse, but when your timing matters and your brain matters, I don't drink beforehand. And I try not to have anything too heavy. That's, again, comedy club food is like chicken fingers and baskets of fries. But I do try to always eat something, because sometimes I feel a little bit like, oh, I want to be lithe on the stage. I want to be light, and forget how much energy it takes. So yeah, just something. I just eat like a normal little, a taco.
I don't eat anything right before I'm about to do something on air, because your mouth starts watering, and that's really weird. It's that thing where you eat something and then someone makes you pick up the microphone. Can we do an update on the long jump, please? And I'm like, I guess so. But if I'd known that a nanosecond ago, I would not now have this chocolate bar.
Yeah, I had no idea. Apparently, I have misophonia, which is being sensitive to the sounds of other people eating. Well, being sensitive, being like, basically I get annoyed if I hear people eating. Not all people, just gross eating. So I don't know if it's, I'm like, how is this a condition? It just seems like you guys are gross and should stop eating gross. But yeah, so that was something I found out.
Misophonia?
It's called misophonia. I feel bad now because I had coworkers, they would be eating in the office and I would be like, ugh, this is so gross. Can you do that outside? And I'm like, oh, that was a me thing, not a them thing. Oops.
I think it may have been a them thing as well.
Okay, thank you, because I do too, but I'm trying to take more responsibility.
Right, best get on with it. Ed, who is joining us on the podium?
Our guest today went to their first Paralympic Games in 2021, winning in Tokyo 2 silver medals in track and field for Team USA in the 100 metres and in the long jump in their cerebral palsy classification. Alongside their sporting achievements, our guest is a strong advocate for mental health, discussing their own experiences as a way to help themselves and also to help others as well. Jalene Roberts, welcome to On the Podium.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here. So we have some photos of you Let's take a look at the first one. These aren't like, I feel like the way I said that was like photos of you doing nefarious deeds, but...
This is after one of your medal events?
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is.
Yes, that was after a long jump.
Obviously, you're an athlete and you want to win stuff, but what were your expectations going to Tokyo and when you actually came away with two silver medals at the end of the Games? Did that exceed expectations? Were you expecting to win things when you went there?
Yeah, so I went into Tokyo expecting to do pretty well in the long jump. For my 100 meters, I actually surprised myself. I didn't really go in with expectations. I knew that I would do okay, and I knew that whatever the outcome would be, I would be glad that I made it to the Games. But when I came out with the silver medal, I think I kind of shocked myself and as well as some other people. So that one definitely was the more exciting moment for me.
And I mentioned it in the introduction, you're an athlete who has cerebral palsy, and not everyone listening to this will really understand what that is. So from your perspective, what is it, but also how does it affect you?
Yeah, so cerebral palsy for me was caused by a stroke at birth. So it's actually a neurological disability that affects you physically. Mine affects my left arm and my left leg.
For long jump, because it's a little bit different than the sprinting, how cerebral palsy affects you as you, more in particular, take off at the board. When you watch an able-bodied long jumper, you see this motion where both arms go in the air and sort of over on top and sort of sweep down as you come through. And when you have your condition, cerebral palsy, the one side, your left side, the arm doesn't come around quite as high because of the range of motion that's impacted. It makes it even more impressive to be able to do something like an event like long jump.
Yeah, so a lot of people, I'll tell them if I put my hands above my head, quote unquote, straight up, my right one is a lot higher than my left one. And so a lot of people will like question me and they're so shocked and they'll try to like extend my elbow and
yeah,
I'm
straighten
like, you
it
can try
out.
Yeah. It's not gonna work. So yeah, that's just one of the things, just a difference in the length of my arms, just because the tendons in my left side are so tight, and really just all the muscles on that side of the body tend to be a lot tighter. Recovery is a big thing too. I of course do a cool down, and then after that, you know, I'm usually like icing some part of my body or and getting like soft tissue work, things like that. When I was younger, I had to wear a lot of braces. I went through a lot of physical therapy. Because as a kid, you already don't have those motor skills developed. And then when you add a condition on top of that, it makes it a lot worse. So nowadays, some people notice it, some people don't. Some people just think I'm injured, so they'll ask me, why are you limping? I'm like, oh, like, I'm okay.
But, yeah, what's wrong with your leg?
Yeah. They'll ask, what's wrong with your, why are you walking like that? Yeah. So I'll just explain. And a lot of times people are not mean about it. They're just like, they're just curious.
When people might see you and they think you're limping and you can tell them, no, this is what my body is, and like when you long jump, no, my left arm isn't going to come up as high as my right. Is that just useful to kind of help explain this to people? Because if Scout has a prosthetic limb, or you might see somebody using a wheelchair, but when you've got cerebral palsy, people might watch the Paralympics and not really know why you're there and not really understand it all.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah, it does help when I have physical videos and pictures of it, just because I've had people message me on social media DMing me about like, what is wrong with you? Why are you in the Paralympics? I have had people kind of accuse me of that. And so I explained to them, you know, not all disabilities are visible. People are really nice about it. And even when people aren't, I never give like harsh responses. If they're still, you know, they're still not understanding, then...
The internet's a wonderful place.
I think it's important because I think that when you do respond in a harsh manner, people tend to stop listening. It definitely is a little bit harder for me to be a representation of that, especially outside of the track and Paralympic world, because my cerebral palsy is very mild. Cerebral palsy is such a broad spectrum. I think it can be a little bit hard for people to like understand exactly what it is until they see someone that has a more severe case of it.
Going back to the silver medals and what you said about the 100 meters being you surprised yourself, we've got another photo here. This is, you've just crossed the line. You're looking up at the time, or maybe you're looking at yourself on the big screen, but it just kind of perfectly seems to capture the moment.
That photo, I think it represents so much more than a silver medal for me. It represented a lot of things that I went through, just physically with training, and then also just as far as like mental health goes and some of those struggles. I knew that I had got top three, but I didn't know if I had got second or third. the Chinese athlete that I had beat in that race, I had never beat her before. So it was a super exciting moment when my name did pop up on the screen as second place. That's my fastest time I've ran ever, by quite a bit.
As a woman, I shouldn't say it that way, right? I'm on the radio. As a woman, it is so nice to see, like, you look like you're celebrating.
Yeah. The hair's on point, it's flowing, every strand is going in the perfect direction. And it's like, it's such a great, because like so many running photos of our, you know, you see yourself and you're like, oh, why do I look like that, you know? And this is like that perfect photo.
I think that's why I like it so much. But I mean, usually like race faces.
You look like you're really proud of what you've done. And I feel like very often women are encouraged to not show that, to be humble and modest. And it's so cool to see this, like, I'm very proud of what I just did.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, like, that struggle a little bit, that, like, expectation to keep it inside? Or with athleticism, do you get to just celebrate yourself?
I don't even think that I could have held that in, because I was so shocked and excited about how that race went. And I immediately looked at my former coach and one of my teammates. They were in the stands. It was shocking. And I knew that my mom, too, was watching back home, and my family. My mom watched all my races no matter what time of the day they were. But yeah, so I kind of have always a little bit struggled with just like celebration like that in general, just because I never want to make anybody else feel like what they do, whether it be track or anything else, is like lesser than. That's why most of my like bios are like just a girl that jumps in sandpits around the world. Like I am, yes, I'm a track athlete, but like I feel like that's the other thing, is athletes struggle so much with grounding themselves in that identity that they become nothing else. Or they feel like they become nothing else. Like, I've been careful with that too, is like realizing that, you know, I'm so much more than like just a track athlete. So that when that's not there anymore, when I don't do track anymore, I don't have this sense of
deep loss.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments of the telecast for the Paralympic Games, and I think one of the most powerful moments actually, was Lewis Johnson interviewing you after you had won your silver medal in Tokyo in the 100 meters, and you know, he asked you what it meant for you to win that medal, and you immediately poured out your emotions and talked about your friend and how, you know, winning this medal, what that meant, and you were dedicating it to her. Can you tell us a little bit more about sort of the backstory of that? And because it really, I know, touched so many people, and it was, for me, like the most powerful and beautiful moment of the whole games was just hearing you talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm crying too, actually, behind my sunglasses.
On March 5th of 2021, my best friend Kendall died by suicide. And I took some time off training. It just wasn't something that I, like, physically felt like I could do. And I actually was trying to, you know, like, work through whether or not I wanted to or I could go on to finish training throughout the summer and compete in the games. And her, myself, and our other best friend, Jelani, my roommate now, we'd always be in a group chat, and they'd always talk about how they're going to go to the Paralympic Games, and she's going to make these shirts and, like, all the signs, and she's so excited to go and all this stuff, and she'd always be so excited and, like, and proud. And so I kind of kept that in the back of my head and remembered how excited she was for me to go, and I think that was kind of, like, my final push to decide that training throughout the summer and going to the games and competing in the games was something that I wanted to do. And so the fact that I know that I had made her so proud, and that's what kind of like that photo means to me. I think that's the moment where I knew that I had made her proud, and I had felt her with me during long jump. I just started like crying, and my mom like got pictures of me on TV just crying. But in the other athlete, she was like, no crying. I was like, it's not bad tears. There's a language barrier.
You're like, I'm not sad about my performance.
You were probably all ready to go to Tokyo a year earlier. And we speak to so many sports people doing this podcast and other things, and they kind of say, yeah, it was a real shame the Olympics or Paralympics got postponed, and I got better from an injury, or I thought I might retire. But like, it's quite small, the things, but fully appreciate it. In your case, it's a big deal. presumably when you've got something ahead of you and then someone goes, actually, no, it's not this year, it's next year. I mean, that must be not that easy to deal with, or not as easy as some people suggest it is to deal with, if that is the thing you want to do and then suddenly it's not going to happen and here's another 12 months of uncertainty.
Yeah, that actually was a turning point for me with my mental health. There were three big things that had happened in about March 2020 within the span of 3 or 4 weeks. School had got moved to online, took a toll on me. And then I had found out that the Paralympic Games were being postponed, which is something that I had been working toward for so long. And then also I was going through a breakup. And so gut-wrenching. And I like completely shut down for like a couple days. You know, I had people wanting to interview me, please give me a couple days. Like, I'm not ready to do that. And so, yeah, it had got really bad. And I had went to my former coach, and his wife and my mom. And I had let them know, this state that I'm in is something that I need help with. If not, like, I think that it could have ended very badly. I don't think that I would have been here to win 2 silver medals. And so I voluntarily decided to go to a psychiatric hospital for 3 days. And I actually got my diagnosis switched from major depressive disorder to bipolar disorder. And I got on the correct medication, and I worked with a psychiatrist, and I got a therapist. So I was taking all these proactive steps, you know, and my coach was very understanding of that. And so he kind of knew where the priorities needed to lie. So I, you know, I was able to get better. But then the next year, with my friend passing, that kind of like was another big dip. But yeah, I mean, my mental health, I'm so open about it because I feel like a lot more people struggle with it than we realize, and society realizes, than coaches realize. And if I share my story, then that'll maybe help just one more person to share their story, and then it'll become more of like a domino effect, if that makes sense. So
yeah, it normalizes it. Again, it feels like there's this assumption that you need to fix it or not have that in order to go forward with your goals and live your life. So to continue to do that while you're doing it, I think is great. It sounds to me like you approached your mental health, though, kind of like an athlete. Like, you noted something is not right, and you went to your trainer, and you addressed the problem, and you worked on it, and like you had a plan of action. Do you feel like your athletic training helped you in your mental health?
Yeah, and also my former coach prior to moving to California to train at the center. I grew up without my father around, so he became very much like a father figure. So he would do, you know, all the stuff on the track, but then taught me how to check my tire pressure, like things like dad things, I would say. And so he understood that if I wasn't at a stable mental state, then my training wasn't going to be as good as it could be, or, you know, my performance wasn't going to be as good as it could be. So he never dismissed my feelings, or he never made me feel invalidated. Unfortunately, I feel like there are some coaches are so fixated on performance.
Or you just need to be tougher.
Those are exactly things that like people struggling with mental illness do not need to hear, you know? And some people grow up and their parents are like, depression's not, you were just sad, you snap out of it. Most of the time, those are the type of people that they grow up and then they don't want to talk about it because their whole life it was dismissed.
I believe he's the person, or at least the program is what got you in Paralympics. He runs a program called Para Sports Spokane out of Spokane, Washington, him and his wife. And can you talk about how you connected with that group and a little bit about that program? Because I think here in the States, it's pretty unique.
My whole life I had played able-bodied sports. And I never really like felt out of place because my whole life I had never known anything about that. I mean, that's a whole other issue too that people don't know about para, you know. But yeah, my whole life I never known about it. So I'm like, no, I don't wanna highlight a part of me that I've always seen as able. You know, I've always been able in sports. I could always do whatever any other athlete could do. The other track coach, the head track coach of the high school, he's like, I met these people at the state track meet. I'm like, all right, like leave me alone. Like what now? Their whole team had come down to Seattle for like a twilight meet. So it's just like a nighttime meet. Anyone can come, an all comers meet. And they were like the sweetest, like the sweetest people, like the nicest people I ever met. And like I said earlier, like I had never felt out of place, but I had never got like a sense of belonging that I got with them. So it's like hard to explain because I never felt out of place, but then I felt so in place, like in my element.
I think people feel that frequently in different, where you're like, I feel fine, and then you find yourself someplace else, and you're like, oh, I really feel good here.
Though. Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of how they were. That's exactly how they were. And so if it wasn't for Teresa, David, and their organization, like, I would have never even known about the Paralympics.
Have you been able since Tokyo to see them or like reach out to them and kind of just say, look what you helped me do?
Oh, yeah, no, yes. And I hope they know. You know, I communicate with David all the time. I mean, and he still acts as like a father figure to me. I went to go train up to their facility. David gave me like a little card. It was just like, don't do this. Like, you know how emotional I am.
This is not the moment.
Listening to On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. With us is U.S. Paralympic sprint and long jump medalist Jalene Roberts.
I think we actually have another photo.
Oh, my mama. Yes, that is my mama.
What's the picture from?
We had actually went out dancing. I think I had like just turned 21.
You go dancing with your mom?
Yeah, she took me out dancing.
That's cool.
She took me to like one of her favorite little spots. Yeah. I love my mama.
Yeah. She's been a big part of your journey.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Really, I feel like that's where it kind of started. Like, her getting me introduced to sports in the first place. She was never that parent that was like, oh, no, you're my disabled child. She never, like, sheltered me. She always, like, wanted me to get out and do things just as my siblings or any other child would, you know? She never made it seem like I couldn't do something, you know? I've done so many different activities since I was younger. I mean, it started with soccer, then I've done ballet, cheerleading, dance, like wrestling, basketball, gymnastics, like literally a bunch of different sports. Any sport you can probably think of, I've probably tried.
From what you're saying, sounds like you were trying to find something that challenged you in the way that you wanted to be challenged.
Yeah, and I mean, I love soccer, but my mom wanted, I think her goal was to like get me out of the house. Not in a bad way, but like obviously I was a ball of energy. So like before school sports had started in like fourth grade, it would be soccer season and I played soccer, and then it would be like a different season. So like played soccer like all the way through, and actually played club soccer in eighth grade, my second track meet of the season at my middle school. I actually fractured my hip.
Eighth grade hip fracture.
Yeah, eighth grade hip fracture. And people they expect me to be doing hurdles or something. I tell them, I'm like, I literally was just running. I was like at the 60 meter mark and something just, I finished the race, but I was in like an immense amount of pain afterwards. And I think it was on my left side, so it was on my affected side. And I just think it's just, again, like everything on that side is just very tight.
We haven't got your mum here for this podcast, but you said that she did one with you, or she was recorded before you did your bit. Did anything she say surprised you? Because I don't know about you, but sometimes this is the things my parents have said to other people in my life, and I'm like, you never told me that. Or they'll go, I had a great chat with your mum. She said this. I said, she never told me that. You know.
She's always been very good about like doing check-ins with all of her kids, like about like, how are you doing? Like, not just like, oh, like, how was school today? But like, how are you doing? Are you okay? Like, is there anything I need to know about, that type of thing? And especially if she knew that like I was in like a very anxious state or whatever, she was very good about advocating for us and checking in with us. So we've always had like a really good like line of communication between us. But she's always been very vocal to me about how proud of me she is. But if I'm at the store with her or whatever in high school, I would hear, oh, like, my daughter, I'm like, stop, I'm uncomfortable. Because, like, I won't do it. But she's like, well, I'm going to do it for you then. Because I'm not going to, like, say, you know, I'm not going to talk about it, but she's going to talk about it. So it's always interesting because you always think about, like, what one decision, whether it's like your own or somebody who's taking care of you, like what one decision, how much that can change your life.
Was she athletic, or does she come from an athletic family, or was it just, okay.
My grandmother on her side, and then my mom and my little sister, they all skate.
What kind of?
Roller skating.
Like quad skates?
Yeah. So,
cool.
Yeah. So my mom and my sister, like now that's like their bonding activity, because I can't do it. I mean,
well, you could do it, but if you injured yourself.
I can do it. I mean, like I have done it, but it's like, I mean, it requires obviously a lot of coordination. So I have done it. It's just, I'm just not as good as them. Let's just say that. And also, I try to stray away from other activities while I'm training also.
I don't know if you mind if I mention, but you have a tattoo of mom. Is that her signature? Or?
So it's a butterfly. And then there's like some leaves and a caterpillar and a cocoon. And then it says, I love you, heart, heart, mommy. So like, I love you, love mommy. So when I was in third grade, I had really bad separation anxiety, so that was around the time where she was pregnant with my little sister. So I'm not really sure if that was it, like I was just anxious about how there was like another human that was my sister in her body, and I just like wanted to make sure that they were safe. I don't know what it was, but it was like really bad to the point where I would like not want to go to school, and like I would want to go home early. I would want to go straight home after school. Like, I wouldn't want to do anything. I wouldn't want to hang out with my friends. I'm like, I want to be with my mom. So we started this thing where I had a journal, and she would like, she would write to me like the night before in the morning when I went to school, and then I would go to school and I would be allowed to like read it throughout the day, like around lunchtime. And then I would write to her like on the way home from school. She would read it that night, and we would like go back and forth like that.
Like, you're writing letters in this journal to each other?
She would just write encouraging letters or like Bible verses, or, you know, like, you're going to do great today. Like, you got this. Like, reassuring me she's okay. Like, you know, that type of thing. And so on the front of the journal is the butterfly that's on my arm. And then the writing is one of her like entries that she did. And then she has the same tattoo, but then it's my little third grade handwriting. And it says, I love you, mommy. Yeah. So that's that tattoo. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, you talk about representation. You've been super open, whether in essay form or with your social media, about mental health. You're a wonderful ambassador for Paralympics. What do you hope to accomplish with all of that? What message are you hoping to send?
I think my main goal is just to just encourage people to speak up and reach out for help. I think that's very important, and I think that a lot of people are scared to do that for a variety of reasons. Maybe just an introverted person that doesn't talk a lot as it is, or maybe it's because growing up they've been told that that's not, we don't talk about that, you know? That's one of my things. And I think the other thing is that younger girls with disability, I think that's like, that's a lot. That's a big part of my why. Growing up, I had never seen anybody with a disability, let alone, you know, a woman. And so it's not, you know, I think it's important for younger girls to see someone that looks like them. I hope that that ignites a fire under them to, you know, want to go and do something like bigger than themselves, and show them that they're capable of that. You know, I think that a lot of the problem isn't that they don't want to, it's that they don't know or think that they can, again, for a variety of reasons, whether it's just internal or, you know, like society that is telling them, like feeding them things, you know. My social media is public. I respond to messages. If people, you know, have questions about like, I'm struggling with this, what's my first step? I'm by no means a mental health counselor, but like, I feel like I'm good at, you know, giving them resources, or it is a huge deal, and it is something that they obviously are wanting help with, and for some reason feel like they can't get it or are afraid to seek it.
So you're just 23, right? You're still relatively young in the space of parasport. What's ahead for you? I know you've made a big life change in moving here to South San Diego and Chula Vista and coming here and joining a new program. Yeah, what can people look forward to from you?
I just graduated in December with my teaching degree in health and physical education. But right now, just with my training schedule, it's a little conflicting. But hopefully within years to come, I'll actually be able to accommodate my training with teaching. So I'd be teaching PE, middle and high school. And then eventually, I do want to start some organization for younger female athletes with disabilities, and also maybe tie some mental health stuff into that. I know at Parasport they have like a women's group on, it's kind of like a group counseling session in a way. It's a different topic every week, and we delve into that, and it's a safe space. So there's not a plethora of organizations like that where you can provide a space to train and get knowledgeable about a sport, as well as some part of it that's geared toward mental health.
It sounds like you're talking about building another one of those spaces, like you were talking about, you found with this group where you were like, oh, this feels right, like building more spaces like that for people to come find. Yeah, that's very cool.
I think that'll be something that I focus on more toward the end of my track career, but I mean, my body still feels healthy, so
do it as long as you can.
My goal is to at least make it to 2020 LA, because I know that I'll have like a bunch of friends and family that want to come, and it's an easier one to go to since it's in the States.
Gosh, thank you so much for joining us. We've loved talking to you and hearing your story, and appreciate how open and candid you are. And I'm excited, I know all of us are, but I'm excited to continue to support you and follow you, and we just wish you all the best. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Hi, I don't know. I didn't feel like she was very inspirational at all.
Wow.
When you speak to someone in an interview setting or even in a one-to-one setting, when there are no cameras and no microphones, people sometimes choose the bit of themselves that they share.
Yes.
I've met very few people who are just, this is me, mm-hmm. all of me. And I just thought that was just wonderful.
Yep, yep. And that's how she is all the time. She's just wears her heart on her sleeve. You never have to guess what she's thinking or feeling because she'll let you know. And I think that's so refreshing in the space of sport.
The stuff that you were saying about, and that she was saying about the struggle of deciding to see yourself as a para-athlete, and I think it highlights the, like, what is what we normally associate with spaces for disabled people. Why is it something that we're like, I don't want to be a part of that? And how can we do that in, have things like the para sports in other areas, like not just sports? Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I feel like I'm kind of rambling.
There's a whole thing, certainly in the UK, around it. You had people being celebrated for their para sport achievements, but there were people living with whatever their disability might be in day-to-day life, but they're not getting that recognition or respect, or they're not being treated the way they should be treated. Mm-hmm. But if you turn on the TV, you'll be excited about somebody winning a para race, but actually it's not one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm. I think there's still so much shame and stigma, negative stigma, that's attached to disability. What we see here in the States and really globally is that society still has this collective discomfort towards disability, because a big part of the disabled experience is that there is a lot of struggle, a lot of suffering, a lot of pain that's involved in the disabled experience. And people as a culture, we don't want to have to face those things, right? We don't want to hear about those things because it makes us uncomfortable. And I think even for people with disabilities, that's a hard thing to reckon with too, right? The experience is already so difficult. And then you have, you know, whether her talking about how, you know, she goes somewhere and people say, what's wrong with you? I get that too. You go in public and they don't know that I'm in a accomplished athlete, but it's just, well, what's happened to you, right? Or it's the stares, it's the look where you can see in their eyes the judgment, but they're not saying anything, right? And so in their day-to-day lives, or just the struggle to live, right, to get basic necessities, to have access to, you know, basic things as transportation or whatever, the experiences can be such a huge struggle. And I think that in society, we still see so much of that judgment and, you know, the negative stigma. And to belong in that group is sometimes a difficult thing to reconcile with. Like, I don't want people to feel that way about me or to look at this way about me. But that really is the beauty of sport, is that for a lot of people with disabilities, obviously not all, I think so many of us are drawn to sport because it's the one thing that makes us feel like we're not lesser than, right? We're not struggling. We're not suffering. And I think that's why sport tells such a beautiful story and is such a wonderful outlet as sort of a coping, a healing, a method that helps us to feel confident in ourselves, that we are not damaged, we are not broken, we are not the things that culture and society tells us that we are. And I think that's evident in her, and I know I can say the same about myself.
Well, that's it from me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. And join us next time for more of this.
A lot of athletes perform to run away from trauma, and it's a way of healing trauma, right? So sometimes if you treat mental health too well, then the athletic performance actually suffers. I often hear from big coaches, hey, don't fix everything, because otherwise you just create happy, fat people.
Double silver medalist Marcus Rogan on the podium next time.